Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Dulski, with my co-host, Dr. Carl.
Today, we are
talking about all about the concept of microdosing GLP-1 agonists, and we're going to talk about the top line results from the CagriSema. First, redefined is the trial name, redefined one. Top line results, again, we don't have the full study yet, but we do have the headlines and some of the numbers that we'll go over, because that was just breaking news this morning. And actually, Novo Nordisk stock dropped by like 20% because it, despite it
which doesn't make any sense. Whatever.
Yeah, but the gist is that they wanted it to exceed or meet 25% total body weight loss. As you know, semaglutide or Wegovy by itself, somewhere around 15 or so percent total body weight loss. Tirzepatide is, 21 or so percent. They wanted to hit 25%, and that's likely because retatrutide, which who knows what they're going to call the brand name, that's that triple agonist, which is GLP-1, GIP, and glucagon, they think is going to hit that 25. It has, I believe.
Well, we have the phase two trial. I know we've talked about it in our
previous podcasts. About it. We've talked about it before. So, we got these juggernaut big pharma companies, going against each other, Godzilla versus King Kong. I don't know. Whatever. It doesn't matter. Mothra? Is it
Oh, God. Come on.
I don't know. I'm not. Whatever. Anyway, they wanted to hit 25%. It only hit around 22 or so percent.
Which, by the way,
is great.
If you would have told us that just a few years ago, so back in the first, what we kind of call the first generation obesity medications, the phenermine topiramate, the naltrexone bupropion, and the first GLP-1 receptor agonist approved for weight loss for obesity was liraglutide with the trade name Saxenda, diabetes name Victoza, we'd be out of our minds overjoyed for the potential clinical benefits of 15, 20, or more than 20% weight loss. Yeah. So what we're going to talk about is amazing. Doesn't matter.
So we'll get into that. So let's first talk about the microdosing. We've been getting a lot of questions about this. It was the concept or the name of it, microdosing, was popularized by a naturopathic doctor. I don't know if it's Tina or Tyna. It's T-Y-N-A Moore. She follows me
probably
on Instagram.
Probably Tyna, because, isn't remember China, the old WWE wrestler?
I should probably listen to the intro of some of the videos she's been on. Anyway, the concept isn't new. We've been doing this go low and slow approach for an individual response to those who, there's some people that hyper respond to very low doses. The concept of microdosing, making what we'd call subtherapeutic doses, is relatively new, and we'll kind of discuss that. So my brother can go over some of the what we call dosing trials, and this is kind of where they start trying to figure out, like, hey, what dose should we use for these people? You do it for every type of medicine. Think about statin. Think about statins. You got to look at, all right, how many milligrams should we put in here? Are we going to cause side effects at this and start getting more side effects compared to the benefit? So
I don't think people realize how much research goes into these. Yeah. All the medications that are ever approved that we talk about, and really, this is part of the reason why we really need to do this for more supplements. Because remember, supplements that do anything physiologically in the body are actually drugs. There's just different regulation over them, and they all need more study. And so, all drugs, they're getting tested. They have what we call biological plausibility, and then they get tested, essentially, I don't know what you would call it in lay terms, but, they eventually get tested in animals, in non-primate animals and then non-human primates, and then early trials in humans. So we have these phase one trials to kind of figure out if they're, you know, what the pharmacokinetics are, how long they last. That's how we ended up with daily shots of some. Now we have weekly shots. Obviously, they were engineered to last longer and have more benefit. And so then, you know, you get into these phase two trials, they're a little bit longer, they're trying to figure out what doses are you getting the most benefit with the least amount of side effect. We have to make sure there's minimal risks. There are a lot of drugs. People don't realize this. I think that, you know, everyone thinks, oh, Big Pharma is making all this money, which, you know, is true. And we have our issues with Big Pharma and how the United States deals with them. But there are a lot of drugs that are in research in the pipeline that never make it to market because they do all these very well controlled with appropriate oversight trials that end up showing, oh, shoot, there's risk and the benefits don't outweigh the risk. So we're not going to go forward with it or whatever that is. So, for example, I guess, yeah, I don't know when this was, but I shared some sort of post on social media a few weeks ago because people were talking about microdosing semaglutide, which is Ozempic for diabetes, Wegovy for obesity. And I said, we have the data for all this stuff that people are talking about, maybe not to the degree of little compounded microdoses of what, you know, the apparently this Tina naturopath is trying to sell to people. But we do. So, for example, in a phase two trial that was published in Diabetes Care in 2016, they were comparing a whole bunch of different doses of semaglutide to the older, well-established liraglutide, the Saxenda Victoza dose. So, for example, and I can't remember how long this was, but they're usually a lot shorter time frame too. But I think these people had type 2 diabetes, and the placebo group dropped their hemoglobin A1C by 0.5%. So remember, this isn't diabetes. Hemoglobin A1C is an average 3-month marker of blood sugar. And 0.5% is actually meaningful, by the way, for diabetes average sugar complications. A hemoglobin A1C of 7 is about the same as an average sugar of 155 milligrams per deciliter. Well, the 0.1 milligram per week semaglutide was basically the same as placebo. So microdosing semaglutide, Ozempic, Wegovy, was the same as placebo in that trial. For the weight change, mind you, placebo was negative 1.2 kilograms. The 0.1 microdose semaglutide was negative 0.8 kilograms. So it wasn't even as good as the placebo group. This is why we do placebo-controlled trials. The 0.2 milligram dose was a little bit better for A1C. Now, this is where there was started to be some legitimate benefit. So it had a negative 0.9% A1C reduction. Well, that's almost twice as much A1C reduction as placebo and the 0.1 milligram. It still had the same weight loss amount as placebo, by the way. In fact, it was still less. It was negative 1 kilogram compared to the negative 1.2. And then after that, the 0.4, the 0.8s, the 1.6s, those all started to get comparable to the liraglutide, the Saxenda Victoza dosing, which was getting, you know, negative 1.3% A1C reduction and 2 to 2.5% body weight reduction. And that's really where the semaglutide, Ozempic, Wegovy starts to beat it, because in the dose escalation of that, it was starting to get more weight loss. But the microdosing for Ozempic was basically the same or worse than placebo, in my opinion, if we're talking about true microdosing. However, you and I were just talking off air that everyone is different, and we do have pretty small doses of these things approved specifically for type 2 diabetes. But the starting doses are the same for obesity. And I had a patient today, literally today, who has type 1 diabetes, mind you. So this is a little bit different than most people, but she also has been struggling with obesity and insulin resistance. And we started her on Wegovy, semaglutide about 4 months ago. She started with the baby dose, the 0.25 milligrams weekly. And then when she got to the 0.5 milligram dose, she felt really well and suddenly had such good benefits that she didn't want to change. Now, this is not on label because technically it's only approved at 1.7 milligrams for maintenance dosing. But for example, Ozempic for type 2 diabetes is approved at 0.5 milligrams weekly. And she felt great at that. So we were able to keep her on that. And over the past 3 months, she's lost almost 14% of her weight. And her amount of insulin she requires, because remember, she's type 1 diabetes, she's on an insulin pump. She went from around 50 units of insulin a day to 24 units of insulin a day, and her sugars are markedly better and stable, and that's on 0.5 milligrams. So I would call that somewhat therapeutic microdosing, but that's still a lot more than what I think these naturopath China is talking about.
So what I
China, sorry.
So what I would here's the thing. When it comes to weight and glycemia, you can see it right pretty quickly, and you can tell if the micro dosing or low dosing is going to be beneficial. You can tell
the patients can tell.
You can tell the food noise. You can tell
that's what
she hunger.
Said. She said, "Oh my god, the food noise is gone. It's goodbye." Yeah.
Yep. And I've had to use it specifically for the Ozempic pen because some patients could not tolerate mm-hmm. that initial 0.25 dose. Yeah. So you go to 0.1, 0.12 basically is
yeah 0.125. Yeah, we do that.
We've talked about
not infrequently.
Now here's the deal. With microdosing, though, and most of the people out there talking about microdosing, they're using compounded versions. So not only are you doing doses that haven't really been studied for long term, we wouldn't be able to make claims about cardiovascular disease prevention or cardiovascular event reduction. We could talk about weight slightly because we have some of those studies that my brother is talking about, but like you can actually see it with weight, but cardiovascular risk reduction, you wouldn't know. It's one of those things that you'd want to put them on a studied dose. So not only do we not have that data, now you're using compounds that, you know, just haven't been studied long term. Now I'm a little bit more, I don't want to say bullish on it. I'm right as of right now, actually, they just took tirzepatide off the shortage list, although there's another 2 weeks of they're going to keep trying to sue him and bring him to court and all these different things. So
Eli and they have a grace period of like 2 to 3 months, I think, to stop having it. So nobody's going to lose it.
So well, 30 days for the 503A pharmacies, and those are more of those state registered pharmacies that do the compound. At 503B, the outsourcing FDA registered 503B pharmacies, those are ones that can basically manufacture large amounts of them and are a little bit more rigorous safety checking and things like that. So they have 60 days, I'm told. So here's the deal. Not only are you microdosing, doing doses that haven't really been studied well. Again, I think you can do microdosing to know if you can tell if it's going to help with your weight or not. It's pretty easy to see. But for some of these other things like cardiovascular disease risk reduction, you don't know. So you'd basically be guessing. So I wouldn't use it for that, but I wouldn't recommend going out and getting compounded versions and start playing around with small little doses for multiple reasons. And we've talked about these risks before. The reason that I would use compounded at any point is when somebody literally cannot get the medicine. If there's a shortage, that's what it was there for. That's literally the point of the loophole in the law is that like, hey, the FDA allows for this. So like if you go with a place that you trust, if you ran out of your Wegovy or let's say your Zepbound or something like that, and you cannot get it and it's months at a time, I think the risk is higher with weight regain than using one of these stopgaps for a compounded version. That would be my stance.
The problem is all the places that the people who's, you know, it's a lot of physicians, which I'm embarrassed to say, but a lot of non-physicians in these med spas, they're just selling access to them. They're profiting from them. If people think, oh, everyone's getting paid by big pharma. That's not true.
No,
that's a lie. These people literally are making money.
They're printing
exploiting
money.
People by selling these therapies to just whomever may want them, as opposed to who really needs them. Now, if it would have been kept to only those people who have responded really well to the medications, and now there's a shortage and they have to have a gap, I would have definitely been more in favor of that. But that's not how it is. Right, and in fact, we, you know, obviously in our clinics, we have a lot of people on these medications. I have not had an issue for a long time for anybody who's been on the, like the therapeutic doses getting any, like people everyone's complaining about shortages. The shortages are done. But I feel like if for those who are appropriately getting them, it's really not been as much of an issue recently.
Right. It hasn't been. And that's why they're removing tirzepatide. I believe semaglutide will be next. It says all doses are available. It can be spotty sometimes. Yeah. Some people are claiming that they can't get it for a few days. But for the most part, I have not had any issues with my patients either. There are a lot of people upset by this decision by the FDA. They think they're in cahoots with Big Pharma. Here's the deal. We don't want this whole thing to unravel. If this thing unravels, say goodbye to competition and innovative drugs. Because what would be the purpose of Big Pharma putting in all this money only for somebody to be able to compound a medicine and just bypass all FDA laws? There wouldn't be as much of an incentive. Now, do we agree that Big Pharma is greedy? Yes, we do. And we do want these drugs to be cheaper. The right way forward is for these companies to get together, stop being greedy. Good luck with that. But get rid of the middleman, the PBMs, because what happens is the retail drug is like $600. So the PBMs, it ends up going up to $1,200.
Well, and the United States has all these other problems. You know, we talk about the direct-to-consumer marketing that's inappropriate. Healthcare is not old-fashioned, good old, straight-up, fair competition capitalism. There's a lot of nuance that has to be considered.
We know. I go to these conferences, and there are Lilly and Novo people that listen to our podcast. Some of them are executives. And thank
Come
you
on, executives.
We know you're listening. Thank you for listening. But listen. You can squash out the compounders and make everybody happy by just going direct to patients, making the vials just a couple hundred dollars. You would literally get no – why would anybody ever go to a compounded version if you can get the legit FDA-approved version that you all manufacture straight from you guys? Yeah.
For an appropriate price that the insurers would be more likely to cover.
If the insurance doesn't cover it, they could pay cash.
Most people can't pay what they need.
So we went on a little bit of tangent, but the gist with the microdosing thing is, so here's what also brought it up. There's this longevity guy. This guy's insane, this Brian Johnson guy.
I believe
he was the guy who started Stripe. I think that's why he's so rich. And he spends a couple $1 million he wants to live forever. That's his goal.
God, he's that guy.
And he makes
now he's using drugs again to
he takes all sorts of crazy drugs. So anyway, the guy's insane. He looks like a vampire, and it's everybody makes fun of him, but a lot of people like him.
But yet he's making millions by faking everybody out.
Yeah.
Just like the naturopath that's selling drugs, ironically. And by the way, we talked about we have a naturopath, at least, you know, some naturopath friends who are extremely legit and stick to the evidence-based stuff. But if a naturopath
Negro was on our podcast, he's a very smart, intelligent guy. Everybody should follow that guy.
But then why these other ones are then they, you know, it's almost like they have to do it for the money. They're like, oh, wait, I guess natural whatever is not good. I guess I'm going to try to fake everyone out with these drugs that are not natural. They're appropriately synthetic, but they're not natural.
They are synthetic.
And then she's selling compounded microdosing versions and trying to make millions of dollars doing that. I'm just so sick of people taking advantage of vulnerable people.
The gist is that compounding might be out of the question anytime soon. Now, I wouldn't do it for the microdosing. If you wanted microdose semaglutide, you can do it with Ozempic. The problem is if you use Wegovy, they come in fixed doses. It is a problem.
Only in the United States, though. That's the amazing thing. So when our patients get the real stuff from Canada, the Wegovy pens are titratable just like Ozempic pens. That's another United States thing. We have some healthcare dysfunction. We don't deny it. I know a lot of people think, we're in cahoots, but it's like, no, everyone can be right about certain things.
Well, back to the Brian Johnson vampire guy. He said he's going to be taking a microdose of tirzepatide a GLP-1/GIP agonist. So he talks about this and he says it's for the inflammatory reasons, but he's taking a 0.5 milligram dose. That's five.
Is that what
times,
he says?
I believe so. 0.5 milligram dose. So the starting dose for tirzepatide is 2.5. That's our therapeutic dose. So 0.5 milligrams. You know, he doesn't want to lose any weight, but he's doing it for the inflammatory reasons.
Right. Now, which he has no data to back that up, by the way. No real data, no good data.
There's immunologic modulation from these drugs. We know that, but what's the end goal? Are you hoping that there's going to be some cardiovascular disease reduction, Alzheimer's prevention, autoimmune? I don't know exactly.
But you're taking a drug now that you don't need.
A powerful
drug. You don't know
drug.
If it has benefit. And I'll tell you, so in the phase one dosing trials, or at least the one I'm going to cite for tirzepatide, they started, their single ascending dose trial was with 0.25, and they went all the way up to 8 milligrams. And every 4 weeks, increased by multiple ascending doses. And that they first did that in healthy subjects. So we do, again, have the data even for tirzepatide. They then followed that because this was back when they, before the weight loss, they were doing the trials in type 2 diabetes. And they even compared it to their old GLP-1 receptor agonist dulaglutide, which people know as Trulicity. And so, so we have a fair amount of data from that. It's only a 1 month trial, but the 0.5 milligrams actually increased people's weight initially. And then after about a month, ultimately ended up in a 0.76 kilogram weight loss, which is about the same as placebo initially.
He doesn't want to lose weight. He's doing it strictly for inflammatory purposes.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what. So you know what happened with the fasting blood glucose? Does he care about that?
He probably should.
So placebo was zero. The 0.5 milligram dose after going up from 0.25 resulted in a 3 milligram per deciliter higher fasting blood glucose. Then when they started to get into the dulaglutide and the higher doses of tirzepatide, that's where you actually saw actual fasting blood glucose reduction. That's why it got approved at those higher, part of the reason why it got studied at the higher doses for diabetes. And then let's see, what else? What else do you think he'd care about? The glucose under the curve, area under the curve, that was all kind of similar.
CRP levels, I don't know. HSCRP?
Yeah, so, I don't know if they did that. That would be, but the thing is, I'm sure his isn't high. That's the problem. If you don't have an elevated CRP, then it doesn't matter. That's an inflammatory marker for those listening. But, but then in the diabetes, they called it a phase 1B trial, weight, he doesn't care about weight, but the fasting blood glucose, the 0.5 milligram dose again was up a hint compared to normal. The insulin area under the curve, I don't know if he cares about that, but obviously these medications increase insulin secretion, which is a good thing. A lot of these people think that it's bad, that insulin itself is bad and inflammatory, so he may be one of them. He'll be disappointed to know that even microdosing, it's kind of a graded scale, so I know people aren't looking at this, but going from zero, it was a pretty relatively straight arrow kind of going up diagonally. So even a microdose of tirzepatide is going to increase insulin a little bit. Obviously, we want increased insulin in those with type 2 diabetes because we want their pancreas to work better. But the fasting blood glucose was up a hint even in type 2 diabetes, whereas with the real doses that ended up approved, it was down substantially. So yeah,
We're not saying that there's not a possibility that these lower doses may have therapeutic effects on autoimmune disease, addiction, maybe.
But then we can study it.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're just studying it.
We're cautious. Just to cap this off,
don't take drugs if we don't know what the heck they're doing.
Please. God. Microdosing, I would just be very careful. I will say that there are some patients of mine that take very low doses.
They're getting therapeutic value. That's like, so type 2 diabetes, for example, they get tons of benefit from 2.5 to 5 milligrams tirzepatide. That's why it got approved. It's like the best thing we got, even at those low doses.
Some of my patients that have obesity plus an autoimmune, they're like, just the low dose, I could tell my joints and everything felt better. So,
but those are still therapeutic doses in general. They came out of these trials.
And they're also FDA. These are FDA approved versions. I'm not against the compounding in general, but like what's going on right now is that these people are exploiting it. And you can see the owners of these, I don't know if I should mention name names. These are public companies, but they are
name them.
Well, Hims stock went down, and it's because the Tirzepatide got pulled off the shortage. And when semaglutide gets pulled off, Hims stock is going to drop further. And I'm just sitting here going, like, what do you guys expect? Like, you don't own the drug. It's not yours. Right. You found a loophole and you're exploiting it. So yeah. What, like, why? And they're mad. You can see them all. Oh, the FDA, and this is a big greedy thing. It's like, you guys are making way more money than all the doctors combined by selling a back end drug because you found a loophole. That's it. You don't care about people with obesity. You actually like are just trying to make
money. They don't even care who uses it. They're just trying to make money.
Talk
about greed. Yeah, talk about corporate greed. Good Lord.
And it's like getting mad at big pharma. It's like they're the ones that research the drug.
Yeah.
Like, don't get
they
mad.
Get all the work, and then everyone else is trying to sell it. And oh my
and
God.
Again, we don't make money from it. Like, in fact, you know what? I've had so many opportunities. I wouldn't be doing this podcast. I would have like millions and millions and millions of dollars. I could have started early on when the first started compounding, and I could have just made printed money left and right with my social media following. Like, that's what everybody wanted. They wanted me to do it. And I was like, I didn't want to do it. I don't want to make money from selling the drug.
To the big pharma thing. I mean, yeah. I mean, like, think about it. I was on a 2016 guideline. They've been asking me to speak and advise and stuff for all the real pharma companies all these years. So for 10 years, I could have been making a ton of extra money, but I declined so that we could have no conflict of interest in writing future guidelines and doing what we do.
We'd have a catamaran in the Bahamas.
Yet I'm sucking wind.
Making tacos and shawarma.
Maybe I should. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, but anyway, and we're not trying to sound like wah-wah. We made plenty of money. We're doctors, whatever. We have good lives. It's just the point that we could have ridiculous amounts of money from doing this. And it's just, I think it's unethical. So anyway, there's that. Let's cap that. Let's talk about CagriSema top line results. This is exciting. We've talked about it before. Semaglutide, we've talked about that millions of times.
Nauseam.
Yeah. You know what it is. It's a GLP-1 agonist. It's not Tirzepatide, which is GLP-1/GIP co-agonist. But what they did with CagriSema, they added a second component. Now, this isn't – it's not the same peptide where Tirzepatide is one peptide, but it happens to hit two different receptors at once. It's two different drugs in the same injection. So what they did is added semaglutide and something called cagrilintide, which is an amylin analog, and we've talked about this a little bit before. It's co-secreted from the pancreas along with insulin, and it comes from what, the alpha cells, right? Does everyone come from the alpha cells?
And back, you know, even before we were in med school, there has been an amylin analog that's been approved for type 1 diabetes for a long time called pramlintide. And they actually did try to study this for obesity several years ago. We looked a lot into it. It never really even caught on very well in type 1 diabetes because it had to be administered 3 times a day with meals similar to the insulin. And so that just added a whole nother pain in the butt for people with type 1 diabetes. And so it never caught on, and the weight loss of that one was and so it just never was beneficial. So they were able to, you know, essentially modify the molecular structure to be long acting into cagrilintide, and now they've been studying that one, and it has very similar sort of mechanisms as the GLP-1 receptors and GIP and stuff like that. For people wondering, what the heck does it do? It slows gastric emptying. It improves pancreatic insulin secretion. It suppresses the glucagon from taking, you know, raising the sugar from the from the liver, and it has satiety benefits, basically.
Yeah, it's pretty cool stuff. So go over, they actually, what they did in this phase 3 trial, they tested the full dose of cagrilintide and semaglutide together. Then they tested it against semaglutide alone or cagrilintide alone. And I believe, was there a placebo as well?
Well,
I don't have the full results. It's just top line
results.
Right,
this is top line results. So this is just like the other one.
They had a placebo because they had to compare a placebo.
Yeah, well, so, you know, so we've known about this for a while because the phase 2 trial, talking about these phase 2 dosing trials that came out actually several years ago. There was a phase 1B and then there was a phase 2 CAGR trial that I feel like we've talked a lot about. So just for example, for people in the cagrilintide monotherapy, meaning they were just studying cagrilintide by itself. It was a phase 2 dosing trial ranging from 0.3 to 4.5 milligrams. They compared it to liraglutide, the sex end of Victoza, or placebo. And just for weight loss purposes, to give people some context, in that study, similar to all the weight loss trials, placebo got 3% weight loss. Liraglutide got 9% weight loss, very similar to the sex end of trials, 6% more than placebo. And then the monotherapy with cagrilintide at the good doses that it got up to was 6 to 11%. So kind of similar to the liraglutide, you know, head to head a little bit in that. And so then when they did the phase 1B, the cagrilintide combined with semaglutide, they had all sorts of different doses. It was a 20-week trial. The bottom line, that compared to semaglutide, ended up getting 8% weight loss in semaglutide, but then it was more like 15 to 17% weight loss in the CagriSema. That sets the stage for what we're talking about, redefine. And this one was obviously a lot longer. It's what they call phase 3 trials. This is what gets things approved. It was 68 weeks. And it's a fixed dose combination. So this, it actually makes it really easy. So they ended up having a max dose of 2.4 milligrams cagrilintide, which is, of course, the same as the 2.4 milligrams of semaglutide. They compared it to the individual components, cagrilintide titrated up to 2.4, semaglutide titrated up to 2.4, and then the placebo group, like you said. And this was all once weekly. It was 3,500 patients. The average weight was 107 kilograms. I should say average mass, I guess, at that point. Something that I thought was interesting in this, and again, we'll have to look at the actual published data. Who knows when that'll come out? But only 57% of people in the CagriSema group were able to get up to and finish on the highest dose, compared to 82.5% with the cagrilintide only, and 70% of the semaglutide only. Now, we know that 1.7 milligrams of semaglutide is approved for maintenance. We literally just talked about microdosing. So, you know, who knows? There may be some increased intolerance with the combination at that full dose, but maybe at lower doses, this is going to open up opportunities. Who knows what's going to come from this, what ultimately gets approved. But the bottom line was those who stayed on the medication, there was almost a 23% reduction in weight in the CagriSema group compared to a reduction of about 12% with the cagrilintide by itself. By the way, that's pretty darn good. So I don't know if that'll end up maybe somehow making
they should. They should something make, by itself. They should make I know, it, but they should do it by itself, because what you could do is instead of just giving it, sorry, Novo, instead of some semaglutide, we do it with tirzepatide, or imagine adding cagrilintide with, you know, the newest one that's not out yet. We need to wait for phase 3, ritonavir.
Oh, God.
Just, now we're just melting fat off of everybody.
Or, but also, you know, going back to the darn microdosing thing, maybe using very small doses in combination for individual purposes, who tolerates what, who responds to what, because this gets into personalized medicine. So ultimately, maybe we can do those things. So anyways, okay. So 23% with the combo, 12% with Cagra, and then 16% with semaglutide, and 2.5% with placebo. Again, very consistent with all the studies leading up to this, not surprising. So over 40% of people in the combo group lost 25% or more of their weight loss. So this goes back to our discussions, very similar to the tirzepatide, Zepbound, type stuff. That's darn good.
I'm going to Surmount One because I wanted to see that categorical weight loss of 25. Let's see, 25%. Oh, so how much was it?
It was 40% achieved 25% weight loss.
Oh, so it's literally tirzepatide.
Yeah, I know. And that's what we sort of predicted, those of us who are not necessarily in the research realm, but the clinical people looking at the studies. After I saw the 1B and all those different dosing trials, I kind of said, yeah, this is Novo's response to compete with tirzepatide, really. And then we'll have to see, of course, all the other health benefits. And only 6% were able to achieve that with cagrilintide, 16% with semaglutide. It doesn't break down the rest that we'll end up seeing in the in the final published data. But, you know, certainly I think this is exciting. It certainly doesn't help the the semaglutide supply issue. So I think we still are cheering on the other companies that have different molecules, and we need to get more supply of all these things.
This is the thing that doesn't make any sense. And Novo, again, you're listening. Someone from Novo right now is listening to us.
Hopefully the CEO.
Like, please.
Give us some money.
What's his name? Give us, sponsor the podcast, please. So everybody's saying, I thought it was the pens. It's the auto injector that's an issue. If that is the case, and it's not actually the active pharmaceutical ingredient, the API of semaglutide that is trouble getting, then release the vials for semaglutide. Release them.
Release the Kraken.
Release the Kraken. Release the vials. Because that's what Eli Lilly did. You have no reason not to at this point, unless there's...
But amazingly, Lilly, to those listening, they only released the 5 milligram vials because they know that for cost effectiveness, if we have 15 milligram vials, we're going to do what's right for people and help them use cost effective dosing, especially when they have to pay out of pocket, which is what should be done anyways. All right, United States, we got to do better getting these pharma drug costs down.
I hope with this CagriSema, it means that there's enough of the semaglutide to go around. You got to figure out these costs, because then all these people that are mad about the compounding going by the wayside, we can take care of them. You can just make it cash for them. If insurance doesn't pay, you make it a lower cost, $200. You can, apparently it costs a few bucks to make a dose. So like $200, come on. That's all you need to do. $200 for a month.
Please.
I won't sell it. I don't want to make money from it. I just want to be able to give it to my patients that need it. Yeah. It will be interesting. We know semaglutide, cardiovascular disease event reduction in those with a prior history of either type 2 diabetes or cardiovascular disease. It'll be interesting to see how cagrilintide added to it. Does that help? Are they going to do those cardiovascular trials? I assume they're going to do all that stuff.
Should you know, I think we're still waiting on tirzepatide. We certainly have high hopes for that. That should be coming out in the relative near future, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, no, that should be coming out next
from what
year.
I heard. And then, who knows about CagriSema? And then we'll have to see about the rest of them.
There's pemvidutide, all these different ones. They need to do it. They need to see if there's class effects. Because imagine adding these different things. You don't know if it has negative effects. We've seen this story before. There are something called CETP inhibitors for cholesterol purposes, and it looked like it was changing their HDL that was going up. And
because everyone was obsessed with HDL, and was like, "Oh, we got to have higher HDL," but they forgot to look at the nuances.
Yeah,
it
was Dalcetra.
Billions of dollars.
It had offshoot effects that were like, "Oh, we didn't see that coming," and people had potentially worse outcomes. So,
well, I know in the pipeline, if we, you're talking about all these different, actually, my wife was just saying that when I told her what we were talking about today, she said something like, the tides are changing. Cause I was like, we're talking about tirzepatide, cagrilintide, semaglutide. She goes, I guess the tides are changing.
Yeah. The tides. Like,
roll tide.
Roll tide.
Anyways. But all these different tides coming out, they're all different, with the glucagon and the GIP and the GLP and the different agonists and antagonists. Some look like they're going to have benefits for some things, like say metabolic associated fatty liver, essentially, maybe more so than the diabetes and other things. Yeah. So there's going to be more personalized medicine coming out of these in the future. So people are going to have to pay attention.
And for the affordability, there's hypotheses that one of these companies that comes out with like a, I don't want to say a copycat, but a similar peptide that does about as well as, let's say, semaglutide, they'll come in and be like, let's just undercut them, because then they'll become the go-to like lower cost version. I'm hoping that happens. And then all of them will, the dominoes will fall. I hope. Not an economist. I'm not a drug economist. I'm just...
In fact, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. But we have our hopes up.
We have a podcast where we could spout it from here, but we don't know what the hell we're talking about. Anyway, that's the hope. That's the hope. So anyway, if you know anybody that's interested in the microdosing, send this to them. Give them for the thoughts. Again, I don't have any problem if you're using low doses if you can see it right there with your weight and your glycemic benefit. If you have autoimmune disease and inflammatory things and you're using it as indicated, I don't care if you use it for a lower dose.
If it helps, great, but cautious, don't be sold by the quacks.
Very cautious about using compounded versions when you don't have an indication for it. There's a place out there where I just posted in one of our Facebook obesity groups about, there's one place out there straight up advertising as, this is for cosmetic weight loss. They're owning it, basically saying like, we don't care if you have obesity or overweight, you can use this for cosmetic purposes.
At least they're being honest, I guess.
It's a dangerous, I can't believe doctors are signing off on that. That's so whatever. Anyway, if you're interested in the newer drugs, send this to somebody who's interested in that CagriSema potential that should be approved by next year sometime. Hopefully. That's usually how it works with these phase three and then getting approval. So we'll see. Maybe by mid or later 2025, we'll see a new drug coming to market. It'll be, and when the new study actually is published, we will go over it in much more detail. Anything else? Otherwise, here's our outro. Nope.
Outro.
Outro.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.